Welcome to the West Highland Way Race Podcasts. I'm John Kinston and this is episode 39. It's now Sunday, the 28th of April, and the Highland Fling Race was yesterday. And I just wanted to get this out, having interviewed Stuart on the Stuart Mills on Friday night before the race, and then this morning after the race. So basically, this podcast is the interview that I did with Stuart on Friday, and then a bit of an update on from this morning about our races. And I hope you'll really enjoy this. Stuart is someone who does think outside the box a fair bit in his running and his ultra running. And the interview I really enjoyed doing on Friday, because he always makes me think about things in a different way. And whether you agree or not with him, it's good to challenge yourself and to think about things. So hopefully you'll find that it's a really interesting interview and you'll be able to pick something up from it. And just want to say a massive thank you to John Duncan and his team yesterday. I've done seven of the Highland Flings. I just missed the first one. And I just think every year it just gets better and better. And it was superb yesterday. The mass start seemed to work well. And the finish was just incredible in up by the way. So thanks, John. And well done to everyone who ran. And I hope that you enjoy this latest podcast on the West Highland Way. Right, welcome to the latest West Highland Way podcast. We've got Stuart Mills with us tonight. It's now almost 9 o'clock on Friday, the 26th of April, and Stuart's flown up from Brighton.
Yeah.
To take part in the Fling. So I thought while he's here, we can catch up a little bit. Now, I'm sure Stuart's well known to many people from his blog and his races and various things. But Stuart, thanks for being willing to do this for us. And maybe you could just give us a short introduction about yourself and how you got into running, particularly how you got into ultra running.
Okay, we'll try and keep it short. I was born in New Zealand and lived in New Zealand for the first 27 years and just did running at school like everyone else. But I wasn't that quick. And the idea, you know, we did 1500 metres and 800 metres and I wasn't that fast. So I just thought, oh, I'll run a marathon. and it, like over here, you've got to be 18. So I lied on my entry form and I did the marathon when I was 17. And so at least, like, you know, the idea was to be the fastest 17-year-old who'd ever done a marathon. And so I did that, and that was the start of it. So I did my first marathon when I was 17. I had an aim to go under 3 hours, and then I did that, just did 2:56. And then I just kept on running. I did another marathon when I was 21, and the aim had moved up to go under 2 hours 30. And I missed it by 39 seconds. And so I swapped sports and became a cyclist. And yeah, and then I was a cyclist and an Ironman. So I've done Hawaii Ironman and stuff like that. And then about 2002, I discovered trail marathons and started doing one or two trail marathons a year, and then did 5 trail marathons in 2007 and really enjoyed it. And then I thought, what's next? And that's when I did my first ultra in 2008, and so this is my 5th year of ultras.
Right. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the Fling, because that's very much our thoughts at the moment.
Yeah.
So you've done 2 so far.
I've done
09 and 11.
Yeah, so I did my first ultra in 08 and I did 3 of them, and actually won all 3 of them, so I thought, well, this is easy. and then I had a friend at work was keen to do his first ultra, and he was coming up to do the Fling. And so I says, oh, okay, we'll both go up. So we both come up, flew up in 2009, and with having done so well on my first 3 ultras, I thought, well, we'll see what happens in this Fling. And anybody who was there in 2009, and the race started, and I just went off a bit quick and left everyone behind, and they just thought, who's that idiot? And I was an idiot because I got lost. And lost 28 minutes, half an hour, and so it was it was a bit of a shock. I came back onto the track and there was a sign saying Mill Guy, 1.5 miles, and the clock had been going for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'd given everyone a half hour head start, and it's a pretty tough when you've got 51.5 miles to go and you're half an hour behind.
Yeah, I remember that, because I think I worked out where it was. It was within the first mile and a half.
Yeah, it was.
Because it's when you go up that hill and turn left, and then instead of going straight on, you then took the next right.
Yeah.
Every time I go past it, I think, oh, that's Stewart's Post.
Yeah.
Because I remember, because that year, I was starting an hour ahead of you, because I was the over 50 that year. And I remember you caught me just after Derry Derrick, and that was the first time we'd met.
Yeah, yeah.
And you went past and said, oh, it's John, isn't it? I've watched your video.
Yeah.
And that you went zooming past, and I thought, oh, I wonder why he's this far back. And it was only later on I discovered.
Yeah, it was.
So that first year then wasn't the best.
Well, it was a real learning experience, because when I realised I'd got lost, I was so angry. And I wear a GPS watch, so I look at it after the race, and I banged out a few fast miles on that flat section because I was so angry, but I sort of paid for it later on.
Yeah. And then when you came back in 2011, was that a better experience?
Yeah, that was good. 2 years ago. And it's sort of every 2 years, because the UK Athletics use it as a selection race. So in 2009, it was a selection race to go to the World Champs, Trail Champs. And then 2011, because the World Trail Champs are only every 2 years, so that's why it's sort of every 2 years. So 2011, it was to try and get selected for the British team to the Worlds. And so it was, and there were some top guys, Jez Brake was there, and Andy James, and a few other top guys. And so the plan was just to try and stay with them as long as possible, basically.
Yeah. What happened? How long did you stay with them?
To about 25 miles. Right. So nearly halfway. And it was just such a great time. You know, the three of us, it was me, Jez, and Andy James, just running together. It was really great. But then I sort of mucked up my nutrition a bit, and then sort of then I ran the second half of the race pretty well all on my own, and so I dropped from third and finished up sixth. So it was from running together with Jez and Andy James for the first half, and then on my own for the second half.
But that was enough to get a place.
Yeah. So they were selecting a team of five. Jez wasn't available, so I got into the team.
Yeah. Great. So what about other races that you've done? You've UTMB, Lakeland. Do you want to tell us just a little bit about your experience of those?
So 2009, after I did the fling up here and got lost, the big race at the end of the year was UTMB, so I went out to UTMB in 2009, and if anyone's ever thinking of doing it is superb. It's obviously quite hard to get into now, you have a ballot. But I managed to get in 2009, and that was the last year where the course hasn't been changed, and we started on time, and so it was a beautiful sunny day. And just ran for 26 hours, one complete lap round the mountain, and it was just fantastic.
Yeah.
And then 2010 was Lakeland 100.
And that was that the first year it was run?
What's that? Lakeland
100?
No, I think it was the third year. It started in 2008. So, I think it was the third year. And I'd run the whole course. I went up for a recce weekend, 3 day weekend. And so I ran the whole 105 miles in 3 days, which is quite a tough training effort, let alone doing it in a day. But Lakeland 100, I just decided that I would just run my race, and the easiest way to run my race was to lead it from the start. So it was a bit crazy, like it was like the Highland Fling. The gun went, and I went flying off and went to the front after 2 seconds.
And you stayed there.
And stayed there.
And you didn't get lost?
No, I didn't get. Well, I learned from the fling that if I was going to use that tactic of deciding to lead from the start, I need to know where I'm going.
Yeah.
And
you can't follow anybody.
So that's why I ran, did a complete recce at the Lakeland 100.
So
I've done the Lakeland 100 twice now. I did it again last year and improved on my time last year.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, if you want to know more about Stuart and his running, then his blog is excellent. And there's, I think you've been doing a thing where you've looked at your life over 5-year blocks, haven't you? So people can look back on that.
Yeah. It was at the start of the year, 1st of January, and I realised it had been 35 years since I'd started my training diaries. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, I'll just do a 35-year review.
How many miles are you up to, do you reckon?
42,500 miles.
Right, yeah. I discovered this week, I was in our church house group, and someone asked me how far I'd run. And I said, just over 28,000 miles. And she said, well, how far is it around the world? And we looked it up on Google, and it was something like 25,000.
Yeah.
So she was really impressed that I'd run all the way around the world. And yeah. I was really. But you're almost
nearly
around your the second time round.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Yeah. So yeah, that's right. 42,035 years of running.
Well, Stuart, you're well known, I would say, as being someone who thinks outside the box a little bit and thinks quite differently about how to approach ultra running. So I've got a few questions I'd just like to get your thoughts on.
Yeah.
Thinking about particularly maybe things that you can share for those that are doing the West Highland Way race, maybe for the first time this year, or other ultras. But so three main areas I want to ask you about. First one is training. Mm-hmm. I know this year you've been saying that you've been doing things a little bit different. So can you tell us just a little bit about how you have trained for ultra races and where your sort of current thinking is in the best way to prepare?
Yeah, just as a sort of safety warning mainly, my training has been up till this year been quite different to other ultra runners, and I've been relying on those 42,000 miles, so those miles in the legs from 35 years of running. So because up till a few months ago I was racing all my races on only pretty well 40 miles a week training, so even though I'm racing the Lakeland 100, which is actually 105 miles, and UTMB, which is 103 miles, I was still only doing 40 miles a week training. So, I was able to do that because of those years and years and years of conditioning. Mm. But one of the key principles of my training is that pretty well all my training is very easy and relaxed, because when you're thinking about a 50-mile race or a 100-mile race, and you then actually look at your minute mile rate, what you're doing, I mean, when I did the Lakeland 100, okay, there's hills and it's rough underfoot and stuff like that, I averaged 14 minutes per mile. So I started thinking, well, why try and run 6:30 minute miles when you're going twice as slow? So I focus, a lot of my training is around 8 minute, 8:30 miling, and it's very relaxed, and it's all about rhythm and relaxation and enjoyment and being in the flow, and I try and translate that into the racing, for especially the second half of the racing. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit different, whereas a lot of people might in their training do tempo runs and do hill repetitions. And so the training is a strenuous and hard work, and yeah, it feels great. You finish a good training session, you think, oh, I really worked hard there, but I don't actually think that's that beneficial for a 100-mile race. So that's, yeah, like I say, it's a bit different to other people's approaches. So yeah, it's all about rhythm and relaxation.
Yeah. But this year you've changed things a little bit, do you think?
This year, what happened last year when I went back to the Lakeland 100, when I did it in 2010 and I led from start to finish and won it, I did it in just over 24 hours. 2012 I went back and improved by half an hour, or just under half an hour, but I was over three hours behind the winner. And so that sort of got me thinking, because I really enjoy I enjoy so much from the trail running. I enjoy the scenery and the being outdoors and the personal challenge. I also enjoy the competitiveness of it. And the fact that I was no longer competitive up the front, it was sort of like, oh, I'm losing that part of the enjoyment. And I thought, well, I could go back. I'm going back to Lakeland 100 this year, 2013. And I thought, well, if I do the same, I'll improve half an hour, but that's still 3 hours behind. So I thought, well, what do? Am I happy to go better, but realise I'm not competitive, or should I do something? And so I decided I'd do something. And so I just upped my training from 40 miles a week to 100 miles a week. I thought, no 50s, 60s, I just go, yeah. And so that was quite different. And then I started doing things differently. So I did start attacking hills. So 5 minutes I was going, 5 minutes ago I was saying, it's probably, you don't need to attack hills, and it's all about rhythm and relaxation. And I think that is all you need if you just want to run well. But I was trying, I've realised if I want to be really competitive, I probably have to do these other things that most other runners do.
Okay. So the race tomorrow, and particularly the Lakeland race, that's going to be the test, really, is it? To see whether it's worked?
Yeah, each year I try and target two races, and the two races for this year are tomorrow, the Highland Fling and the Lakeland 100. And the upping in the training was generated because of the Lakeland 100, but I don't think it's going to do any harm for tomorrow. So I'm hoping that those extra mileage and that I've done, and the conditioning and different ways of approach thing will be beneficial tomorrow. We'll find out.
So have you got a target for tomorrow?
I plan times. So I plan times because there's four checkpoints. And so I have times at each of those checkpoints, so that my sort of subconscious is aware of how long it's going to be running for. But that's, I'm more run by feel. So I try and run by feel, or run with people around me and stuff like that. So it'll sort of, I try and just focus on the moment, at that exact moment in time during the race, and let the finish time and let the finish position look after itself. Yeah. So there's sort of, you know, but I have to plan a time so the subconscious knows the typical duration, because if it doesn't know the duration, it will be too conservative. So there is a time there, but it's not really aiming to a schedule, so it won't be sort of like checking my watch every 5 minutes or everything. And quite often I try not even to look at what it is, because most of the time if you do that, if you get there behind schedule, it's like, oh no, I'm down on schedule, I'm not running very well. And if you get there ahead of schedule, it's, oh no, I've gone out too hard, I'm going to suffer. So looking at your schedule is often, either way, whether you're faster or slower, can often be a negative response.
Yeah. Okay. And Stuart's staying with us tomorrow night as well, so it would be interesting to do another little bit before we finish and see, and you can tell us how it went, whether it worked or not. Okay, so you talked a little bit about your training then. The other thing I'd like to ask you a little bit about is your race strategy. Now, you talked a little bit there, and you've mentioned a few times about having this idea of going off hard. Now, I would say 95% of things that I've read and talked to about ultras is to go off comfortable and get slower.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
people slow down. But I know that you've had some thoughts on that, and certainly have a different way of seeing things. So can you tell us a little bit about your strategy, basically, of ultra running?
Out of all the things which I think out of the box and do differently, I have this sort of motto, philosophy, is run as fast as you can while you can. And I think out of all the things there's lots of things I put on my blog, but that one philosophy I think is probably the one I'm most comfortable and confident in, that it works. And the reason I say that is because when you run 50 miles, it's going to take anything from 7, 8 to 14, 15 hours. Okay. No matter what pace you run at, whether you're running fast or slow, after 5 hours of running, you're going to be tired. So my philosophy is, well, when I start the race, I'm totally fresh. So why go off at 9 minute miling when I'm totally fresh? I might as well go off at 6:30s or 7 minute miling, and I'm going to be tired after 5 hours, but I would have done 40 miles, Whereas if I went off slow, I would have only done 35 miles or 30 miles after 5 hours. So that's the logic behind it. But there's a little bit more than that, because as I mentioned earlier, I do get enjoyment from the race. So I think of it as a race. So my idea, it's a race, it's not training. So therefore, when the gun goes, when they say go, it should be a race. So that means I should be working hard, I should be focused, I should be going fast. So if I go off just at training pace, it's sort of like, well, I'm not racing. And so there's this sort of belief, and a lot of people say a marathon, oh, the marathon only starts at the 20-mile mark. And so what happens is most people, when they do a marathon, and same with these 50-milers, they'll think, right, I'll try and get to halfway or two-thirds comfortable and really comfortable, and then I can start racing. And it's sort of like, well, no, the race starts when the gun goes. So what happens is it creates this bit of doubt. By having that approach, I'm going to start conservatively, subconsciously you've created doubt that you believe you're not fit enough to race the whole 50 miles. So you probably don't realise, but the idea of I'm going to start conservatively is actually being a negative thought, but that's how I interpret it. So it's the only reason you do that, because you don't have the belief or the confidence to actually race the whole way. It's not just being stupid and run as fast as you can while you can. There's actually some sort of logic in terms of the positivity, the negativity, the confidence you've got, and to actually complete the distance.
Yeah. And have you found that has worked for other people as well? People that you've coached or talked with, or
yeah.
What sort of response do you get from your thoughts?
It's people love it or hate it. Yeah. They do. Some people just say you're totally off your rocker, and they sort of like, well, it may work for you, but it's the wrong way. And then I get lots of feedback where people totally agree with it, and they've changed their approach, and they've decided, yeah, why be cautious? Why be sort of scared or overcautious and conservative and think, oh, I'm just going to take it easy to halfway? Yeah. And people have often reflected that, actually, yeah, I did start quite slowly, but the second half of the race I was still tired. And what often happens, if unless they reflect, really deep reflection, they'll think, oh, I must have went too fast in the first half. So then they go even slower in the next race, because they have this feeling that the pace you run makes you get tired in the second half. Where I sort of believe that up to a limit, obviously there is a limit, you can't go super, super fast, so just run as fast as you can is sort of within reason. But I don't think it does affect you. So and some people have tried it, and they've found, yeah, that's great, I should have been more ambitious. And what also happens is when they do go out faster, they get all the joy and excitement and positive energy of running faster. Mm. And so then that makes them actually, yeah, you know, go faster and faster. Mm. And so, yeah, there's more to running than just physiology.
Yeah. Is it trying to find, though, that you're saying within reason?
Yeah.
You know, because obviously if I, like tomorrow, if I went out with the leaders, I could probably last for 5 miles.
Mm.
But then I wouldn't be able to, you know, I'd be crawling by the end.
Yeah.
So there must be it's knowing yourself well enough, is it, to know what is within reason.
It is. That's the difficult thing. Yeah, what is within reason, and I think that comes just from experience. If you wanted to attack it tomorrow, your attacking speed would be different to my attacking speed. Yeah. You know, and. You know, I often, what I try and think of is, I try and think, like I say, I don't try and think of the race as a whole long journey. I think of it just in little sections. And so I'm quite comfortable and happy to start a 53-mile race like tomorrow at marathon pace. So I know what, I can run a trail marathon in 3 hours, 3 hours 15. And so that intensity, which I can only hold for 3 hours, 3 hours 15, I'm quite happy to hold that for the first 2 hours tomorrow. And then, so that's, I know I can't hold that the whole way, but I know I could hold it for 3 hours, but then I'd be, you know, done. But the intention is to sort of go out harder and faster at an intensity higher than what I really should be doing. But it's not 10K pace, you know, so it's like, so it's a little bit quicker than what it should be. But then I will slow down, but so does everybody else. And so everyone else who are probably the same, if we think of physiologically, the same physiological ability as me, they've gone off at the sensible pace they're meant to go off for the first 2 hours, and so they're 5 minutes behind me. They get tired after 2 hours, I get tired after 2 hours. We run exactly the same pace for the rest of the race, but I'm 5 minutes ahead of them.
Right.
So that's...
So I've heard quite a few people, still in marathons, talking about for every 10 seconds per mile you go too quick in the first 5 miles, you're going to be a minute faster over the last 5 miles.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
No, I totally disagree. No. It gets back to that point. I don't, you know... You're going to get tired in the last part of a marathon, and within reason, I don't think the pace you do in the first half has that much of an impact, you know. And I was just analysing the data from London Marathon last week, and you know, and typically the message for road marathons, so it's a bit different for trail marathons because you can't run an even pace because you're going over terrain and tree stumps and stuff like that. But for a road marathon, the typical message is trying to run as even pace as you can. You know, that's sort of like, you know, you don't want to go out too hard, you want to save stuff for the end. Well, out of the first, I think it might have been the first 130 finishers or whatever it was, and this is in the mass field, so it's not the elite, because the elite sometimes quite different. Only one person in the first 130 finishers ran an even pace, and they're the best 130 runners in the field. So if the idea is that you should be running an even pace, well, those first 129 out of the first 130 got it wrong. But if they got it wrong, well, they kind of got it wrong because they're the top 129 in the field. So what the message is saying, that you need to be conservative and not go too hard. The best runners, the fastest runners, don't do that. And you do get one or two exceptions, and people start really slowly and they move through the field. But then the question is, they'll never move through the field and get to win. They'll move through the field and maybe get high up. But what if they got higher up, an even higher up place, if they'd started faster?
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that's, you know, one of the reasons I also do it, because I enjoy it. I'm running fast,
yeah.
You know. But everybody to themselves, really. But I think the key thing is, are you, as I mentioned earlier, are you creating doubt by saying I'm going to run off conservatively to save myself? Is that a negative thought? And that's the real message.
Yeah. I think whenever we've spoken to you, I've always really enjoyed it, because you do challenge me to look at things slightly differently, and I think that's what your blog does. I think that's the, you know, the conversation. And I think if you always just accept the perceived wisdom, you know, then you're not going to change much. But it's, I think it's good, you know. I think someone like yourself who challenges that viewpoint. I know personally I'm still working it through, you know, still trying to work out what's best. And you know, for me, the last 2 years I've had really tough finishes in both the West Highland Way and the Lakeland race, where the last 14 miles was just it was really, really tough. I had to use all my mental resolve just to finish. And so that colours my little thinking, knowing that this year, particularly for the West Highland Way, I want to try and finish strong.
Mm.
You know, so that's a big factor for me.
But in terms of your struggling in those last few years, did you start significantly faster in those years? Or did you struggle even though you didn't change your pace at the start?
Yeah, I struggled. Yeah, I don't know why. I think it was a number of factors, but I tried to start more conservatively.
And you still struggled.
And I still struggled.
Yeah. Exactly. That's the message I'm saying.
Yeah. But it's having the confidence or the belief to go.
Yeah. So you know, if I was in your situation where you struggled 1 year and you thought, oh, okay, maybe I was a bit ambitious or whatever, and then the following year you decide I'm going to start conservatively and you still struggle. So having that conservative, like I say, it creates doubt, negativity in the subconscious, and you still struggled. It showed that the pace you started at doesn't make any difference. So I would go the opposite, go the exact opposite and go eyeballs out and then see what happens. And then you've got the two extremes for the following year.
Yeah. So I would say, looking back on my best year, say 09, when I did a good fling and I was sub 20 for the West Highland Way, I would say my little splits that I had, I was spot on all the way.
Yeah.
Because I knew myself really well. My training had gone well, and I had confidence that I could run to Drimmen in 2 hours and still finish strongly. But I don't think those years I went off too hard.
No.
It was more of an even run, even though obviously I was slowing down because everyone slows down.
Slows down, yeah.
But I didn't go off at a suicidal pace.
No. But I think the key word there is all about confidence.
Mm.
And when I was talking about the training I was doing prior to the last few months, where it was all about being easy and relaxed and only 40 miles a week, I was able to race quite well on that training because I was confident that training was sufficient for me.
Mm.
And in reality, all you're trying to do in your physical training is to develop confidence that when you're on the start line, you feel prepared.
Mm.
You know, and it doesn't matter whether you do 40 miles a week or you do tempo runs or 100 miles a week. The real aim of the training is so you feel confident that you are prepared and you're able to achieve what you want to achieve.
Mm.
So you know, you say that your best years was when your training went really well and you felt everything was okay, so you were confident that pace you were going at, it was the right pace, and so it was the right pace, and so you ran well.
Mm.
But because you've got that, you've had a couple of struggles, there's that uncertainty and there's that doubt, and it's just, it's not your training which is affecting it, it's all about the uncertainty and doubt, which then gets into your subconscious, and that actually causes the performance, that drives the performance. So it's, you know, and people always think about, oh, my training's going great, yeah, and they perform really well, and they think it's physical training causes the really good performance. Or, oh, I've had a really bad training patch, I perform really badly, physical training, if I have a poor physical training, I get a poor performance. But they forget the middle thing is the confidence.
Mm.
And so the training doesn't actually, the physical training doesn't directly cause the performance, it's that causes the confidence, which then causes the performance. So it's all, that's the middle bit that people forget.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, I must say, I do feel confident for tomorrow because I've had some good training and I feel as though I'm definitely feeling stronger at the moment. I'm running well, so it'll be interesting for me as well to see.
We'll ask you your splits tomorrow night.
Definitely, yeah, that'll be good. Just to maybe to finish, Stuart, you mentioned a number of things there, but particularly for those doing, say, the West Highland Way race for the first time, if you had to share some key tips of there's 8 weeks between tomorrow's race, and a good number of people will be doing both, or certainly if they're not doing the fling, they'll be doing the Kettering probably in a few weeks' time.
Mm.
So for those 8 weeks, what sort of things would you encourage people to be working on as they prepare for the West Highland Way race?
I think the West Highland Way race is 95 miles.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think the most important thing to remember when you're doing these long races, 95 miles or 53 miles, 100, is that the approach you take for a marathon, you can't use for an ultra. What I mean by that, typically a marathon, most people will do around 18 mile, 20 mile run. So they've done two thirds, three quarter distance for their 26 miles. So they feel comfortable, they feel happy that they've done three quarters in training, so they can do that last little quarter. And what happens is when it's a 95 mile race, if they have that same approach, I've got to do a 65, 70, 75 mile training run. And if they have that sort of mentality, like, I should be doing three quarters, then what happens is there's that doubt again. And so, and what often happens is most people going into their first long race, like a West Highland Way, and they've never run that far, they might have only done a 50 miler, they'll be concerned, they'll have doubt, they'll be worried, they'll think, well, I haven't even got three quarters of the distance. And there's that. And I think the best thing people should do between now and the next 8 weeks is to realise that you don't have to have done three quarters. And it's about deciding, and they should have decided what is their longest run they need to do, and not then do it and think, oh, I should have done more. So they have to make a decision. And when I did the when I did my first year of ultras, I was doing a 56 London to Brighton off-road race, and I had that same doubt, and I thought, how am I going to race 56 miles? So actually I went the extreme and I did an 85 mile race as a training race, so then the 56 would be easy. But so that was actually, that's the way I got over it, but it's a bit hard than doing a 100 mile race to get out to, you know, to over prepare. But I think really, if you believe, it really gets down to this belief, what do you feel you need to be able to have done? And so it's deciding what training you feel is necessary, whether you do the 53 miler as the fling and then you get through that and then you're happy with that. It's having that belief that even if I only do 30 miles, I map out, I'm going to do my 30 miles for my longest, and I do it and I've decided that's enough. So the worst thing is when you're on that start line and you think, oh, I wish I'd done a longer run, or I wish I'd done more. It's all about deciding what you need to do. And I think it's useful to have that written down and have it clear and chat to other people and get other people's ideas, saying, how long do I need to have as my longest run? How much training miles per week do I have to do? What would be appropriate? Should I do a race 5 weeks before or whatever? But it's all about, and once you've made that decision, do it and then stick with it. Don't then do it and then think, maybe I should have done more. So that's, I think, is important. And there's no magic formula. You've got to do 40 miles a week or 60 miles a week or 100 miles a week or anything like that. All you've got to do is what you believe you've got to do. And I think if people look at my blog, and I've itemized my training, you know, when I did 26 hours at UTMB, which was 22nd place, so I was pretty pleased with that. My weekly mileage for the 16 week build up was 36 miles a week. But I was able to race 26 hours because I was totally confident. So I don't know how I convinced myself, but I convinced myself that doing 36 miles a week was sufficient to race 100 mile races. How I did that, I sometimes look back and think, how did I convince myself that 36 was okay? But I somehow did. I believed, I had total belief that my preparation had been good, and therefore the performance.
Yeah. And also, as you were saying earlier, you had 40,000 miles.
That's why I started right at the start, because people who haven't got that 40,000 miles wouldn't be able to do the same than 36 miles a week. So that's why I said that right at the start, because those 40,000 miles stay in the legs, they stay in the body, and so that's, like I say, I've been living off those 40,000 miles for, I've gained, you know, what I did 30 years ago, I'm gaining the benefits now.
One thing I'd like to ask you, I remember the first year I did the West Highland Way, Ian Beattie, the race director now, he said to me that he often did a two-day run in May, halfway between the Fling and the West Highland Way, and that's something I've done every year when I've done the West Highland Way, and so I do 42 miles on one day, and then 35 the second day. And those over that weekend, that's been a real confidence booster. You know, because I find the second day I'm running 35 miles with tired legs, and that's what it's like.
Yeah.
Because it is quite hard to replicate what it's going to be like the last 35 miles unless you actually get to 60.
Yeah.
So would that be something you would recommend, or?
Yeah, I think that's a really good strategy, because what you're doing is you're doing two long runs in a row. Mm. Because if you try and do one long run of 60 miles, you'll just damage yourself, you tire yourself out, you'll be exhausted for 2 or 3 weeks. Where if you did a 30 and a 15 or something like that, 30 and a 20, then it does, let's say, it develops your confidence. And so you feel like, well, actually, I did do those two long runs. But then what it could do, though, which you've got to be really careful, is that second run, you know, you're starting the Sunday run really tired. And what could happen is that you really struggle, and then it creates the doubt, because then you finish that and go, blooming out, and that's only 50 miles and I've got to do 95. Yeah, so you can see how you've got to be really cautious that, yes, if you can get through it and feel, yeah, I got through that and it feels great, then that's a good training session. But if you really struggle on that second day, then all that will do is just reinforce the doubt and the concern and the worry. How am I going to do 95 when I can barely manage 50 and I've had a night's sleep? Mm. So there is that. So that's why I always focus on, in some ways I'm lazy, I always focus on training which I know I'll be able to succeed and achieve and do. So therefore, I don't get any of those negative responses, which then creates the doubt.
Yeah.
So you know, that's all my training. So I, everything I do, I try and make sure that it always creates positivity. And the last thing about the preparation for these last 8 weeks, I think people should reflect back on every positive bit of training they've done in the 16 weeks, 20 weeks leading up to the West Highland Way. Mm. So, in that last week or in the last 2-3 weeks, even write it down and just think, well, I did that great back-to-back run, and it was really good. If you did the back-to-back run and the second day was rubbish, well, don't remember that one. Forget about that and think about, well, the first day was fantastic, or I did that race and that was fantastic. And you just, because all you're trying to do is you're just trying to collate evidence the whole time. You're just trying to collate evidence so you can be on that start line feeling prepared. Because if you're on that start line and you've got that voice saying, I haven't really done enough, that's when problems occur.
Yeah.
So I think that's, it's, in some ways it sounds a bit simple, but that would be my main approach.
No, that's good. So you're basically saying it'd be better for people to do less mileage, but making sure they finish really positive, than thinking they've got to do this 40-mile run and ended up feeling really, it's been really tough.
Yeah, there's no point being too ambitious with your training, doing more than you've ever done before because you feel you've got to do it, and then really struggle.
Yeah.
Because then all that does is create doubt and worry and concern, and that's the last thing you want.
Yeah.
So you can, there's, I've just seen you've got a good book collection there. There's this chap, people might have read him, Matt Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
He's written loads of books and he's quite good. He thinks a little bit out of the box. And one of his quotes in his book is, the only purpose of training is to give people the belief that they've done enough training. And when I read that, I thought, he's copied my idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for someone like that who's, and that was in Run by Feel.
Yeah.
So his whole book about Run by Feel is all about running by feel. Don't worry about how much training, you just enjoy it, the flow, the rhythm, being in the now and stuff.
Yeah.
So other people are saying that same message, but yet a lot of people are still back into the, you've got to do more.
Yeah. Great. Well, thank you very much, Stuart, and I'm excited by tomorrow. It's going to be fun to do. It's now almost 20 to 10, so we'll be going to bed soon, hopefully. Up at 4 o'clock, we'll need to be up and away by 5, and the race starts at 6. So,
and
I hope you have a great race, and I'll wave you off from the start, and then we'll see each other at the finish.
Yeah, and it'll be it'll be interesting how our chat goes tomorrow.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back. It's now Sunday morning. It's just after 8:30. And Stuart's joined me again. We've had our breakfast. And just before we take Stuart to the airport to see him off, we thought we'd just conclude this podcast and get our thoughts about yesterday's race.
Yeah, so we thought we'd start with seeing how John's race went on. So briefly, John, we've discussed a little bit over breakfast, but for the listeners, briefly, what happened in your race yesterday?
Well, I set off with my sub 10-hour plan, which I thought was always going to be a challenge, but I like to give myself a challenge. And I finished in just under 2:06, 2:05.59. 10. Just under 10:06. So I was pleased with that. I got to Drimmen right on time. I got to Balmahar right on time. I got to Rowadennen right on time, literally to the minute. And then I lost 7 minutes to Inversnaid. And then I knew that it was going to be a struggle. It's hard to make up seven minutes on those splits I had. But what I was pleased with is that I kept what I should have done to Ben Glass pretty well, and then to the end. So the 6 minutes I lost in that one leg, as it were. So overall, I would say I was happy. I did find the last 2 or 3 hours my quads were quite sore. Up and down those hills on the Crian Larrach, I was starting to struggle on the downhills, and I know that if I'm struggling on the downhills, then it's going to be hard then, because I'm not running the uphills there, but I need to be able to run the downhills. But overall, I was happy.
But the conditions were pretty perfect yesterday.
They were, weren't they? Yeah, it started cold, but then it warmed up, didn't it? And it tried to rain once, just for a little bit, but didn't come of anything. But no, they were perfect conditions.
Yeah. And that leg where you lost the time, can you identify what was it that caused the losing time?
It might be that I was a bit ambitious. I gave myself 1:18 to do from Rowadennen to Inversnaid, and it took me 1:23. So it could be that that was a bit unrealistic, but when I look back to my best times, my 9:44, I was running a lot more of that hill.
Yeah.
Whereas yesterday, I didn't run much of it, and I know that within the field I was slipping a little bit. There was people catching me, and that's always a sign to me that maybe I've dropped the intensity, as it were.
And when you base your times, you base these split times you do, there's about 14 of them during the course, you base those on your previous fling races.
I've done 7 now, and I've done 5 West Highland Ways. I've done countless training runs, and I based them as well on my performances this year. So I adjust them a little bit, so that's they are pretty accurate for me. Because it's based on if I run this hill, if I walk there, then I should be able to do it within that time. But it's little things like I stop for 1 wee, and you stop for 45 seconds, that puts it out as well.
That's right.
But generally, we were just discussing, weren't we, over breakfast, of because my heart, first time I've ever ran with a heart rate monitor for a race, and it was really interesting. And my overall heart rate was 136 for the whole race, but for the first 12 miles to Drimmen, it was 133. And what was your comment?
John didn't do a 53 mile race. He did a 12 mile warm up and a 41 mile race. But it is. It's we had the heart rate trace, because for the next sort of 3 or 4 hours, it was around 145, wasn't it?
So it was over 140.
So for the first hour 50, 133, and so he obviously hasn't been reading the run as fast as you can.
And that's the debate, isn't it? Because if I'd have ran to Drimmen 10 minutes faster, which is basically if I ran a heart rate of 143, it probably would have been at least 10 minutes. Would I have then finished 10 minutes earlier? Or would it have been that by the time I got to Inversnaid, I had nothing left and I'd be crawling, and I'd have been 20 minutes slower? That's the interesting discussion, isn't it?
So that's what you know what you got to do next year.
yeah. So generally, I had a good day, and that was good. So how about you, Steels? What was it like at the top end of the race?
It was, as we mentioned, it was a bit chilly at the start, and took a while to get warmed up. I think it was about three degrees. There was a few guys I recognised and I've raced before, but we took off just at a nice, you know, it was reasonably quick but comfortable pace, and I was running. It was basically Duncan Harris, who goes pretty well. He's a veteran over 40. Him and Ricky Lightfoot. Ricky runs for Solomon team. I think it was a sort of first venture into the 7-8 hour races. They were just running at the front because it's a nice path and you can have 2x2, you know. So they were just sitting, running at the front, and then I was just snuggled straight in behind, just thinking, yeah, this is good. And there was about five of us in our bunch, and then there was about a 20 metre gap to about six in a bunch behind, and they just were just 20 metres behind. And then after about 5 miles, Ricky Lightfoot decided they're just up the pace, and so we were doing about 6:30s. Just what it felt like, and although I wear a GPS watch and the heart rate monitor, I never ever look at it during the race. That's for analysis afterwards. And so he picked up the pace, and only Duncan and there's a chap from Morocco who lives in London there, and then they were the only two guys that went with him. And so those three moved away. Yeah, and I just drifted back, so then I had a nice group of six or seven, and there was a few guys, and it was really interesting because I was thinking, yeah, this is okay, but I'm not cruising that much. And Marco, who I don't know his last name, Marco
Consani.
Yeah, he was chatting away, and I was thinking, I'm an hour, and because I've raced him probably in previous flings, and he's always about 20 minutes behind, and I was thinking, either I'm struggling here, or he's on, so you know, he's going really well. Anyway, so we cruised along. We got to Dryman, and just before Dryman, you got a couple of climbs, and I couldn't stay off the bunch. It was amazing. It was, and I was chatting to some guys afterwards. They says, "Yeah, we got a shock, bit of a surprise when you dropped off." And I thought, "Yeah, I got more of a surprise." You know, when I couldn't stay off it, so I had to let the bunch grow, the bunch of six or so, and there was Andy James was in the bunch, Matt Williamson was in the bunch, and a few other guys. And so I was then dropped in 10th place, and one guy overtook me going up Connachill, going significantly faster than me, so I dropped to 11th. And I ran basically on my own the rest of the way. So I was in 11th place, and then I overtook the Moroccan guy. He was struggling just before Invernade, so it's about the 30-mile mark, and he was walking, and he actually DNF'd at Invernade, and he said he was just found it too cold. I chatted to him afterwards, and then I got past a couple of guys after Bine Glass, just before you go in through that gate, and those undulations, which are really—they really knock you, and if you're just slightly below par, so they were walking up those undulations. So again, I went past them and ended up. So that moved me from 11th up to 8th. So,
nice.
So it was an okay performance. The time was 7 minutes slower than 2 years ago. So.
Just go back a little bit. I'm on Friday when you were talking about one of the reasons that you like to go off fast is so that you love the competition.
Yeah.
And you like being with the bunch, and you get a lot of positive energy from
that.
So how did you find it when you were dropped? When that group went away, and presumably you were a fair distance the next guy behind you, so you were on your own.
Yeah.
So what happens then when you lose that?
Like I say, it was a shock because I knew I was in good shape. I prepared well, but because I've been doing increase my mileage and stuff, I think I've lost my top end threshold stuff, and I was puffing and blowing up those little rises, and there was a long climb after Dryman, and it was a bit of a, you know, like I say, it was a bit of a shock to actually get dropped, and then after Connachill, I sort of worked okay up there, but then we mentioned the other day how the reasons I run, and you know, I run one because it's amazing countryside and the scenery and all of that. I run because I have my personal challenge and trying to get the most out of myself, and I run for the buzz and the excitement and the competition and the battling and stuff, and that was gone, and it was sort of like, well, gone, no competition. So I thought, right, I'm just going to make sure I really maximise the other two, because I'm not getting the buzz, the positive, the energy from the other competitors, because I was totally on my own. So I probably, and yesterday's race, although I finished 7 minutes slower, in terms of the intensity and the focus required and my concentration, it was probably the easiest race I've done. And because I was, you know, looking at the scenery more, and I was just trying to, and what was really quite neat was, even though I got dropped, it was like, yeah, but I'm in super fit shape. Oh, I'll come right. Oh, I'll be okay, because I knew I'd prepared well, and so I didn't let getting dropped become a negative. I thought, oh, well, it's just a slight blip, it'll be okay. And so I still managed to run well. So I lost all my time all on that one leg from Dryman to Rowadenham. So I lost 13 minutes on that leg, and then the next leg I ran exactly the same as 2011, and then I went 6 minutes faster on the last leg. So yeah, it was when I finished, people asked me, was I disappointed? And it was sort of like, I was disappointed because I wasn't disappointed, and it's sort of like I was expecting to get a PB time, and you know, I was thinking I could do maybe a 7:40, and in the end I did 7:59. And so, but yeah, that's, you know, I should be disappointed, but I'm not pleased, because I should have run faster, but I was, in some ways I was pleased that I still ran, you know, strong, sort of reasonably strong the whole way, you know.
Good. What about the actual organising the race? How did you find the whole experience?
Well, I mean, this is the third time I've come up now, you know, 09, 11 and this year, and every year it just gets better.
Yeah.
It was superb. It was, I mean, it's always been good, but they changed the finish area from 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And they had marquee there, and they had massage and soup, and oh, it was, and free beer, and it was just, you know, every year is an amazing race, yeah. and the buzz is so good.
I would agree with that, because I've done it 7 years now. Mm. You know, in the first year I did, it was the second year of the race, and I think the first year there was about 17, and then the first year I did it in 07. There was 70, and it was just a very low key race, and it was great. And each year it's got sort of bigger, and as it gets bigger, obviously the infrastructure needs to change, but it still kept the same ethos. Yeah. And there was two main differences this year. One was the mass start, which I think seemed to have gone really smoothly. And I think for someone like myself, because I've started at 6 o'clock as the over 50s the last few years. And as much as I've tried to convince myself, it doesn't matter when you guys go past me. It is hard, yeah. You know, because you're doing the best you can, and you know these guys go past you, and they started an hour after you, 2 hours after you. So I quite like the fact that once I'd started, once I found your position, you know, the only people that overtook me were people who were doing better, and that's fine. Or the relay runners, and they had numbers on this year, and that was better. So you didn't have to think, oh, is that in our race, as soon as you saw the number, you said, well done, you know, but it doesn't matter about them. But I thought the finish was just amazing, because when I came round, you know, when you got the piper and you come round, and suddenly there was no one there, and I thought, oh, and then they said go left, and then I turned left, and as I ran down towards all those flags, I was welling up a bit, because I thought it was just, that was amazing.
Yeah.
And just running down that thing on your own with all the, you know, people to clap in, and it was just a lovely, lovely feeling. And I thought, as you say, having that big marquee so you could get your massage and your soup, and there was first aid, and there was somewhere to sit.
And hot showers.
Yeah, a hot shower. Yeah. So I think a big thank you to John, isn't it?
Yeah, for them.
And he said, I think there was 80 people that were giving up their weekend to help. You know, it's what makes these, you know, these things so worthwhile, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, And I think, you know, chatting to people afterwards, there was so many positive stories. People who ran a lot better than they planned to, and some, you know, folks had some really good races. Mm. And those that struggled at a battle, they finished, and that elation of finishing. So there was, you know, I don't know how many finishes there are, maybe 350 or so. Everyone's got their own story to tell, haven't they? Which is great. So thank you very much, Stuart, and it's been really good chatting on Friday and getting your thoughts, and then chatting this morning. So we wish you a good journey back, and what are your plans for the rest of the year?
Well, as I mentioned, on Friday, the big race, this was, you know, a big race yesterday's, but the main big race is the Latin 100.
Yeah.
And my training was all input for that, to get around 100 miles and not slow down so much. I think the fact that I ran 6 minutes quicker on the last leg yesterday shows that there is some endurance coming in. Yeah. So I'm hoping that I can sort of build on that a bit more it'll be 13 weeks yesterday for the Leighton 100. So I've got one 44 mile race in about 6 weeks' time, and then the Leighton 100, another 7 week gap to that.
So you're planning some more 100 mile weeks?
I am. I'm going back to the 100. I've sort of eased off because I had a couple of marathon races, and it's not wise because I'm always a bit stiff and sore after a race and marathon, so I had to ease off. But I'll be 2 weeks' time, I'll start looking back up to 200s. And I think it does, it builds that resilience in the legs. And so, you know, you mentioned you were getting sore in the quads and stuff, and I think one of the things yesterday I noticed was I wasn't getting that soreness in the legs, and that's why usually I'm having to really focus and concentrate and deal with the discomfort of the legs, and yesterday it was like, oh wow, this is a bit different. So there are, you know, I am getting some benefits, so I think I can work on that. Like I say, I'll still try. I need to work on my top end speed because the Lakeland 100's not the same, but just getting dropped. We haven't mentioned, but yeah, I'm just moved into the over 50 category, so I think maybe my speed's just beginning to go now that I've gone over the 50 category.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that. Congratulations for winning the over 50s, and also breaking the record by a good hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, was an hour 10 it was.
Oh, 10, was it? Yeah. Okay, yeah. Right.
Yeah,
so that's good. I think that's going to stand for a good while, unless you break it next time.
Yeah, no, I'd like to be back, whether it's next year or...
Yeah. We were saying last night, where we felt quite sorry for the guy who came second, because...
He took
10 minutes off it and was just on 9 hours, was he?
Bang on nine hours.
And then he must have thought, oh, I've got a good chance here, and then discovered that you'd won it, so... But well done to him, and well done to everybody who ran the race yesterday. I say there's lots of great stories out there, and I'm sure there's lots of tired bodies, people recovering the day after. So thanks again, Stuart, and we look forward to following your progress in the rest of the year, and particularly for the Lakeland 100.
Yeah, that's great, thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this latest West Highland Way Race podcast. I've got another one lined up. I'm meeting with Ian Beattie, race director, and Sandra McDougall next Saturday. So I'm going to interview them as well and get their thoughts on the race and on the organising side as well. So that's another podcast lined up for number 40. So I hope you've enjoyed this one. And if you did take part in the fling yesterday, I hope you're recovering well. And particularly if you're then going on to do the West Highland Way race, it's now less than 8 weeks away. So I hope your preparation is going well and you learnt lots of things from yesterday's race. So thanks again for listening. And remember, slow and steady wins the race.